Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. I'm John Norman and alongside me, Steve Harmison. In the week that the England squad for Sri Lanka was announced, what an incredible show we have for you. Steve Harmison sitting down with his old England cricket teammate and darts companion, Sir Alastair Cook, to discuss, amongst other things, Moeen Ali, Dan Lawrence and Johnny Bairstow. It's a fascinating listen, so make sure you stick around for that. You'll also hear from Surrey spinner and possibly future England star Amir Verdi ahead of his trip to Sri Lanka as part of the reserve England squad and what he has to do, he believes, to break into that first 11. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Thanks for listening to the show. Once again, alongside Steve Harmison. Harmy, loads going on this week. You've recorded a brilliant interview with Alastair Cook, Sir Alastair Cook, which we will listen to throughout the show. But for the first section, first off, let me just name the England men's test squad to go to Sri Lanka. Two tests in the middle of January, just been decided upon, both at Galle, before the team will fly out to India. There will not be a warm-up between the end of the Sri Lanka series and the start of the India series. And this is interesting in itself because essentially what it means is not only is it six back-to-back test matches, you've got six back-to-back test matches and the players are going to have to live in a biosecure environment. And when you consider the problems in South Africa trying to play three T20s and three ODIs and the mental strain as well, that's going to be something to keep an eye on. First off, though, here's the squad. So, Joe Root, captain. Moeen Ali, back in the squad. James Anderson. Johnny Bairstow, another one recalled. Dominic Bess. Stuart Broad. Joss Butler. Zach Crawley. Sam Curran. Ben Foulkes, who was named in the Sri Lanka squad in March of earlier this year. Dan Lawrence gets a call up. Jack Leach, Dominic Sibley, Ollie Stone, Chris Wokes and Mark Woods. The first thing, there's so much to talk about from that squad, but the first thing that really leaps out the pages, is there really any need for so many fast bowlers?
Yes, it looks as though the top heavy on the fast bowlers. And I think your intro in there, John, gives it a little bit of wear. We're not going to have warm-up games. We're going to have six test matches more or less in a row. I think England have picked two bowling attacks. I really do. I think they've picked two bowling attacks. I think you're going to have a top five and a wicketkeeper, so there's six. And then I think they're going to play, you're going to have two different bowling attacks, especially in Sri Lanka. So I think you're going to have five bowlers for one test and five bowlers for the next test. And I look at it, I'm thinking, whether they're going to play three spinners. I think Moeen Ali comes into the group with Dom Bess, which when I first seen that, I thought, you know what? What's the point of Moeen going, or what's the point of Bess going? Because they're not going to play two off spinners in a test match, but they might play three if it is a complete and utter raging Bunsen that they think they're going to play. They need to play three test matches where Moeen Ali potentially could fit in as a number five in place of a Dan Lawrence. But I think if they're going to play two spinners, I can see England playing the top six batsmen of Crawley, Sibley, Root, Bairstow, Lawrence and Butler. And then they're going to pick two bowling attacks and they'll probably go with Curran, Anderson, Wood plus two spinners. And then for the second test match or the first test match, whichever way they're around to do it, they could go Wokes, Broad and Stone, which gives them two 85 mile an hour options plus having a fast bowler in each attack. So I think because they've gone heavy that way, that's why I think they've gone down the road of picking so many fast bowlers. The batsmen will bat One group of bowlers will play the first test match. One group of bowlers will play the second test match. And that's their intro into India.
There was also a couple of omissions. No Ben Stokes. He's rested, as is Jofra Archer. Rory Burns misses the series because of the imminent birth of his first child. And no Adil Rashid. Now, the national selector, Ed Smith, was asked about the prospect of ever seeing Adil Rashid play red ball cricket again.
Everyone knows Adil Rashid's fantastically talented cricketer. Obviously, we brought him back into Test cricket in 2018 and England had a very good sequence of results at that time. It is also the case that Adil has said in the media exactly what he said to me, which is that he has had a long-running shoulder injury. It's made really good strides. However, he does have concerns about that shoulder in, you know, under the strain of five-day cricket. And obviously, he's got to weigh up his one-day and T20 form, which is outstanding. He's, you know, he is among the most irreplaceable players in a very, very strong white ball setup. And that's where he stands at the moment, that he tilts that way. But he's been very honest and, you know, he does have those concerns about his shoulder and he's going to stay where he is for the time being.
I think we're going to have to put to bed the thought that we'll ever see Adil Rashid ever play Test match cricket again. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I actually think it would be a backward step for Adil. If I was advising Adil Rashid, I'd actually advise him not to play Test match cricket again, for the simple fact is he's in the best place he possibly can be in his game at this moment in time. He's playing some of the best white ball cricket he's ever played. And I think to jeopardise that by going and playing in possibly three or four Test matches, especially when you've got a World 2020 coming up around the corner, and I'm thinking of more long term from Adil's point of view. He has a good T20 World Cup, then all of a sudden it gets him into the IPL and other franchises. In theory, he's playing four Test matches short term, and then there's going to be no long term goal, long term outcome at the end of it, because he's not going to play. England only play one spinner in Australia. He'll not go and play there. And then all of a sudden, if his shoulder does start to sort of slow down and pack up, is he going to be as demanding on the white ball circuit around the world after the T20 World Cup? So if I was as much as I'd like to see Adil play international cricket again with a red ball, I actually think for the best of the England cricket team and for Adil Rashid, he's probably better off where he is. And I agree with Ed Smith on that front.
Interestingly, the reserves named for this tour, we're going to speak to one of them later on in the show, Amir Verdi from Surrey, but also two leg spinners, Mason Crane and Matt Parkinson. Now, Mason Crane is an interesting one, isn't he? Because he was in the team a couple of years ago, played in the last Ashes test, in the Sydney test, I think.
Yeah.
And then was on the outer, to use a horrible cliche. He seems to have refound his love of the game. He's refound his game itself. And I wouldn't, with the way England and a lot of teams kind of pick spinners, I wouldn't be surprised if Mason Crane actually leapfrogs a couple of the names in that initial test squad and actually possibly gets a game in the next six.
Yeah, I think he'll play in India. I really do. I agree with you, John. I think he'll play in India, for the simple fact is, talk about getting his game and the love of the game. Mason Crane had a bad injury. He had a really bad, I think it was a shoulder injury. He had a couple of little niggles, but I think he had a really bad shoulder injury, which for a young bowler, it took its toll to not get his identity back, but to also get his action back and the confidence and leg spin. And you listen to Shane Warne, the greatest bowler of all time, and the way he talks about, you know, the way your confidence you have to have and the way you have to work at your game. You know, if you have a setback, which Mason Crane has, it's took him a while to get back. You know, that's fair enough. But I think for the England selectors to identify him and see him as a replacement for this trip and then potentially India, I actually think they've got one eye on him playing. They've tried Parkinson in the red ball. It didn't really work in South Africa. It'll be interesting to see how he goes in spinning conditions in Sri Lanka, because obviously he'd be in a reserve, he'd be over there to see how he goes. But I actually think, I agree with you, I think if Mason Crane hits his straps and hits areas in practice, it wouldn't surprise me if by the end of the India series he hasn't played one or two Test matches.
Interesting. We'll have to wait and see. There is another feeling that comes to me from looking at this test squad, and that is that, you know, have England, by selecting this expansive team, almost given up on playing in the World Test Championship final in the summer? Because India is going to be hugely important as a series for them. This squad that they've announced almost seems like they're hedging their bets, they're getting their team ready for India. It's almost like they're approaching it with the eyes of a warm-up.
Yeah, but I think you've got to have a look at people. I really do. You've the mental health aspect that everybody goes on about at this minute in time, I think is real. I do think it's real. I think it's more real and more evident more than ever. I would not like to have done what Jofra Archer has just done and spent 9 months basically chained up in a hotel room. No matter how much I love my PlayStation or Xbox, I really do. The lure of a nice restaurant or a bar would get me out every time. So I don't envy what Jofra's had to go through. Ben Stokes has just been through the same. So I think England have to have a look at people. But when I look at it, I'm quite excited. When I look at the first Test match, I want England to bat Sam Curran at 7. I really do. I want them to go and bat Sam Curran at number 7 and say, right, there's responsibility on your batting. You've got Moeen Ali behind you, who's probably a better batter than you. But I want to see what you can do. Listen to someone like Nasser Hussain speak about Moeen Ali as a batter. And when they say, when he bats at 7, he bats like a number 7. He bats at 8, he bats like a number 8. And what he means by that is there's not as much freedom, there's not as much responsibility when he bats at number 8 to what he does as he thinks as an out-and-out batsman at number 7. I want Sam to have that responsibility. I want him to learn how to play the game, especially in spinning conditions, because with no Ben Stokes, he is our all-rounder. And I think the little things like that, I think, long term will benefit England, English cricket, more than looking at what's round the corner in the short term. Of yes, we want to be in the World Test Championships. I do not see why England can't go to Sri Lanka and win with this group of players and potentially give some players some confidence and playing in these conditions to go into India and potentially win Test match series in India. Bear in mind, we come back to India, and I know Ed Smith said this, it's going to be 2 Test matches in Sri Lanka, then there's going to be 2 in India, then we evaluate and probably send Josh Butler, get a rest, and X, Y, and Z, we see it as 2 Test matches, 2 Test matches, 2 Test matches. If England are either 1-0 down in the series going into that third Test match, England have got to pick their best team. They've got to pick their best team. So all that planning and preparation, yes, that's fine, having one eye on it now, but getting to Ahmedabad and when these Test matches start, you know, some of them thought processes might have to go out the window if England see themselves a chance of winning the series, because, you know, as much as you've said, long term is key. You know, the short term of beating India, especially when India have got to come to England in the summer, I think there's some vital points to sort of put on people. The last thing you want to do is, if you get off to a good start, just release the pressure by sending people home for the sake of it. So I think there will be a different thought process as and when the series goes on.
Brilliant stuff. Well, look, we'll talk a little bit more about the squad later in the show. I want to get your thoughts on Moeen Ali as well. Now or never. That's how I read this next 6 Test matches for Ali. I want to talk a little bit about Ben Foulkes as well. We're going to hear your interview with Alistair Cook. So Alistair Cook, he speaks about Dan Lawrence, his Essex teammate. That's another interesting angle. I love this about Test cricket. The fact is, you go into these series and there's so many unanswered questions, and you do not get that with T20 and ODI cricket in the same way. Anyway, plenty to come on the show, as I mentioned, so Alistair Cook, and also an interview with Amar Verdi alongside Mason Crane and Matthew Parkinson, named as a reserve for the upcoming series to Sri Lanka. You're listening to The Cricket Collective.
There it is. Moves on to 100, Alistair Cook.
That's the best of Alistair Cook. 200 of the very best from Alistair Cook. A glorious stroke to get there. That is one strong mind and one strong man.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on Talk Sport 2. I'm John Norman, alongside me Steve Harmison. Very shortly, an interview with the great Sir Alistair Cook, as the National Lottery is honouring grassroots sport today, with a number of sporting venues set to be renamed to pay tribute to those volunteers. Later on, we'll speak to Surrey's Amir Verdi, Surrey's Keir Over, one of the grounds that has been renamed, for volunteers who have gone above and beyond the call of duty to support their communities during the pandemic. And so to discuss this and plenty more, I'm delighted to say that the former England captain, well, he's just a legend. He was certainly a legend in the West Indies when we were whining and dining with him after a day's play at the cricket. So Alistair Cook sat down and had a good old chinwag with his former teammate, Steve Harmison.
Army, nice to speak to you. How are you?
I'm not bad. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. It's a good week. I've been out of the old... you've got me out of doing the old wet sheet work.
So oh, brilliant. Talking about getting you out of the farm and stuff and the national lottery stuff, there must have been somebody in your growing up. I know you spent a lot of time with Gucci in the indoor school at Essex, but there must have been one or two when you grew up where you have to give a special memory to, mention to, because without them, you wouldn't have been able to sort of get your career off and running.
Yeah, well, I think, well, ultimately, firstly, your parents are that kind of unsung hero, aren't they?
Yeah.
Giving you the opportunity to take you around. But I was more thinking, like, now, like the cricket clubs, like now. Mm. Like, I was thinking the two cricket clubs I'm involved in, you know, Maldon Cricket Club at home, where, you know, I started when I was 11. And, you know, without the Elliots, without the Coker family, without Neil Foster, without the Randall family, you know, there's about four or five. I'm sure I've missed some out. Because they just run the club, don't they? They're the people who do all the jobs you don't want to do. They're the ones who are pushing everything through. And like, even here up near now, I've moved near Bedfordshire, the Evershot Cricket Club, the Garrett family. Again, they go above and beyond to make sure that cricket club, you know, is given the opportunity. The Turners are great, Brickhill. There's so many I know of, and they're so important, and they are unsung heroes. And well, they're probably, you know, the National Lottery have made. And them sung heroes with changing the names of the iconic events, and it's such a great kind of just to remind everyone at this time, you know, certainly leading Christmas there, that how important grassroots sports is.
And the people that are doing it now, and it's very difficult to do, you know, cutting the grass and getting your clubhouses when you don't know what's going to go around the corner. You play county cricket this year, and you probably had to wait 3 or 4 months when you thought, well, I'm not even going to play this year. I might not play. You know, the age you're at, I'm not saying you're an old man anymore, but the age you're at, you're thinking, you might have been thinking, I might not play cricket ever again. There are people in this country who might be thinking it might be 12 months, 18 months and beyond before they play cricket or any other sport again.
Well, that's absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there's a couple of examples. Imagine you go to school and you're getting into your, like, you know, your last year, and you think, oh, I've just got to play, you know, this is the year I get to play my school cricket, you know, be in the first team, you know, whatever age group, and suddenly that's taken away from you. Yeah, and this summer, you know, summer holidays, there was no cricket until the August, wasn't there, for the clubs. And that's why, you know, the Keir Oval today is called the Shadu Alam Ratan, I hope I've got that right, Oval, because, you know, this guy runs Capital Kids Cricket, which Brilliant. Is a charity for, you know, deprived areas of London for grassroots. But during lockdown, you know, while they couldn't meet up, he ran a virtual session, so keeping them active, keeping them socially together. And again, that's above and beyond, isn't it? Like, what, you know, it could easily say, well, we haven't got anything to do, we won't do it. He has made a difference, and quite rightly, the Oval is named after him today.
Oh, that's fantastic. Can you talk about the Oval?
Or what has happened here? What a way to bring it up. What a way to bring up three figures. Alistair Cook has done it. A century in his first ever test match and now a century in his last.
Somewhere where you played your final test match against India. England go to India. I'll touch on your career in India in a second. But, you know, there's one player especially I want to talk about in the current England squad who we're probably going to see in Sri Lanka and potentially India, and that's young Dan Lawrence. What are we going to expect from that young man, having you've spent a bit of time with him, seen him growing up and being in the change rooms? What are the England fans, first of all, going to expect from him? And have you given him any advice going forward about what's going to be like in India?
Well, I did put on our WhatsApp group when he got picked to say, if you ever want advice making your debut in the subcontinent, just let me know. I didn't get any bites. No one jumped on it. But the like he's a brilliant batsman. He's unorthodox, as I think Ed Smith said. He's got a slightly unusual technique. But his greatest strength is without a doubt his mind, which I think is a brilliant thing to have. I think the difference, I reckon, for a lot of people, can whether he'll make the step up or not. We never know, do you?
You don't know until they do it.
Before. Exactly, you're exactly right. And all the preparation he's done, he's been in a successful Essex side on tough wickets. So I think, you know, his numbers probably don't add up to what people are saying. Well, the average is just under 40. But remember, a lot of those games have been on not the best wickets of Chelmsford. Result wickets, like 220 is a very good score, has been. But he's played in a winning side. He's got a winning mentality. That is absolutely right. And we saw this year, the big development for him was he goes to Australia, flat wickets, Kookaburra ball, and he was a standout, wasn't he? He was the guy getting big scores. So, you know, he has got something, without a doubt, without a shadow of a doubt. I think he'll cope with it. I think he's got that self-belief and confidence to do with it. You just need a little bit of luck, don't you, to get you going?
Yeah.
And these things, you get a little bit of luck, gets a run, which I think he will do with Ollie Pope not being playing, Rory Burns. I think he'll play these two test matches, gets a big score, he's in for India and he can fly.
Yeah, I was just going to say there, that little bit of luck, where do you see him batting? I know you've been in the captain situation where a position comes up and you've just got to fill it, but where do you think Dan Lawrence could bat for England and where do you think England could best use him?
Well, naturally, I would say he's a five. Like, that's where I would see him looking at his game. I think he'd be able to adapt to a number of situations in terms of if they need pushing on, quicker runs. But also, just he's got great game awareness. He's very savvy for a young kid. He got a brilliant 100 in 2017. You know, everyone talks about the shots he's got. He got a brilliant 100 2017 against Jimmy Anderson, Lancashire first game of the season when we won the league, but we were pumped for 3 days. You know, we were under the pump, and he got 7.5 hour 140 to save the game batting. So he can adapt his games. I would like to see him at five. Honestly, I don't know where he's going to bat in this team. Like, Johnny Bairstow has come back in. You know, they seem like, I'm not entirely sure they know what they're going to do. Joe Root could go back up to his number three spot with Zach Crawley and Dom Sibley starting. Root at three. Could be Dan Lawrence at four because Ollie Pope's not there. So, and then maybe Johnny Best at five. Or do they want to push Johnny up, a bit more experience? And he goes around a bit like he has been. But it's a good problem to have. But yeah, it looks... I don't quite know where they see, but I'd like to see him fitting in at five.
It's a sweep from Bairstow. It's 100 from Bairstow.
There's a name there. It just popped into my head there. I didn't have it on me now. It's Johnny Bairstow. What do you make of the Johnny Bairstow situation? Because it just seems that every time they want to discard Johnny, he doesn't want to be discarded.
Yeah, well, he had a tough 18 months in Test cricket.
Yeah.
And if you start looking at that, you can kind of see he's been around a long time, played a lot of cricket, and just naturally, like the 2019 World Cup probably took over in his mind. He went up to open, you know, a year as he started that, and he flew, didn't he? Absolutely flew, and it's been unbelievable. The IPL, and I think probably what's happened is techniques. He's kind of like just lost a bit of that, like what I was going to say. Just probably lost his edge in Test cricket because his attention was somewhere else.
Yeah,
so he lost the form. And, you know, and he quite, I think quite rightly got left out the side. I was a little bit surprised that he's not that I'm surprised he's coming back in because I think he's a brilliant cricketer. It's just that I would love a bit of clarity from the England selectors saying, is he going as a backup batsman, a front order batsman, or is he competing with Josh Butler and Ben Folk, the keeping slot? And me personally, like, I've loved how Chris Silverwood has come in and he hasn't tried to put round pegs in square holes. He said, no, we want the top three. What are our best top three people to put the miles and the batter's legs? No, like, he's opening for this, he's opening for that. Who's our, do you know what I mean? The top three have got to be, you know, set the platform up. So they have been Dom Sibley, Rory Burns, and now Zach Crawley's come in. Do you know what I mean? Very clear. And then
very
the four,
clear.
Five,
yeah.
six. And four, five, six, very clear attacking, like Ollie Pope, Ben Stokes and Joe Root, adapt to situation, but look to push the game on. You know, your keeper bats at seven. That's how it's kind of worked, isn't it? And I thought that clarity has really helped. Now, I think Johnny Bairstow will definitely we need that clarity.
Do you think that was his problem in the first place?
Probably. Well, I mean, again, the numbers didn't quite add up towards the end. So I think that was ultimately the problem. But he has, remember, he had batted at three, did change. You know, he lost the gloves, kept the gloves, lost the gloves. I see him as competing with Josh Butler as that keeper batsman. I think he's the all-round cricketer. And that's what I would like to see in that clarity. And everyone knows where they stand there. But, you know, he's got given an opportunity. I don't think he will keep in this test match. I think he will play just as a batsman. And as we all know, Harmy, if he scores runs, does well, he's very hard to leave out.
So Alistair Cook speaking with Steve Harmison, a man that he somewhat foolishly agreed to be the godfather of Harmy's child, I think. Is that right, Harmy?
It is, yeah. Charlie, my youngest, I did ask him the honour to be the godfather of and trust him to looking after one of my children if anything did happen to me or Haley.
Well, he is a God-fearing individual. He used to be a chorister, didn't he? He's singing the choir when he was growing up. Yeah,
born on Christmas Day.
Well, there you go. Inspired choice. To find out more about how the National Lottery is celebrating the work done by unheralded people across the UK, visit www.lotterygoodcauses.org.uk. Plenty more to come from that interview. Don't go anywhere. It's just Sir Alistair Cook, Steve Harmison. You're listening to The Cricket Collective.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Racing back for the two that bring him his double hundreds. Alistair Cook celebrating yet again.
Or what has happened here? What a way to bring it up. What a way to bring up three figures. Alistair Cook has done it. A century in his first ever test match and now a century in his last.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on Talk Sport 2. Myself, John Norman. What an easy ride it's been for me this week. Just sit back and listen to two of my old heroes chatting cricket. So step forward, Sir Steve Harmison and Sir Alistair Cook.
Somebody else who is coming back into the team, somebody you know well from playing under-19s and growing up with, and that's Moeen Ali. Do you think the break of the game could have done him the world of good? And yeah, do England... Does he play? Does he go straight into this team? Because you've had Tom Best, who's done relatively well as England's only spinner, while Jack Leach has been injured and poorly. Rashid's not been playing. So does it complicate the matter by bringing another off-spinner into the group?
I think what it does do, it gives England the option of playing three spinners if they think they need three spinners.
Yeah.
You know, with Moeen's batting, good player of spin, he's done well against Sri Lanka. I think if they want to go three spinners... Sri Lanka obviously recently have played on some flat ones and all, but before that they played on some minefields and against South Africa, 2 day test matches. You know, England, the last tour, it was pretty good, but they did spin. So I think with Moeen, that all roundness, you can play three spinners, that gives them the option. And I think looking ahead, it keeps that option open of who will be the number one spinner to go to Australia. Obviously, got India before that, and they were not going to look past it. But ultimately, they're only ever going to play one spinner in Australia.
Yeah.
And I think they would love to see Moeen back to his best to keep the competition with Don Best, who I think has done remarkably well, actually, for what he's done. He's a learning process. He's a massive learning project, and but he's worth investing in, isn't he? I think I like him as a cricketer. But Moeen definitely will be better for the break, and I think he'll really value coming back playing in that England squad again.
He's on strike. Is this the moment? Yeah. It is the moment. What a way to do it as well. He's going to get a boundary through the offside, and he is delighted, and so he should be. What a test debut.
Right, I've got 5 minutes, and I want to talk about Sir Alastair Cook and playing in India. I've got, you've got 161 test matches, 12,472 runs to go at. There's two games in India I want to touch on, because I want to talk about the captaincy in India and how you go about captaining two spinners and a little bit for Joe Root. And you did that in 2012 when you captained that great test match win in Mumbai. But the first one, a little baby-faced assassin coming over, test match star. I've done some homework here. 1st of March, Alastair Cook, Jimmy Anderson arrive from the West Indies, replacing Simon Jones and Marcus Trescothick. 4 days before, you turn up in my room, first time I'd ever met you, throwing darts at the board. And I remember after being half an hour during a little conversation, you walk out of the room, and I remember turning to Freddie and said, this kid belongs. The just aura about you belonged, and you came in and you went and showed that in Nagpur. First of all, how did you feel going across into that? It was a very, very strong dressing room as well, because you had just come off the back of a 2005 Ashes win.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I can't remember. I think, you know, that without putting you right here, I mean, the bit which was Pakistan where I first turned up.
Oh, you turned up in Pakistan, that's right, yeah.
When I first met you, and I did know no one. You're right, absolutely. You know when you're the big superstars of 2005 over every newspaper and stuff. And I turned up flying into a place, Borney, I think I was, ended up playing because Strauss was going to go over a test match. And I put my doors out and I got a knock on the door. And this is no word at all. I got a knock on the door, and it was you who knocked on the door and said, come on, lad, I can't do your accent. Come into my room. And I come into my room. And I was like, Jesus.
You better put that into context. It might not sound very good, that.
I didn't try and do your accent. That's why I didn't bother. And I literally, and you dragged me into, there was Freddie lying on the bed with a dartboard, never thrown a dart before. And from that moment on, I love darts. I was terrible to start with. But that support you showed me, was unbelievable. So then when I did turn up in India 2 days before or 3 days before, I felt as if I knew the guys a little bit, because I was called at replacement at Pakistan, and I wasn't in the original touring squad for India. I was at England A. Ultimately, it was the best time to make my debut, because I flew around the world. No one expected me to do well against Kumble, Harbhajan. Never played in India before in a match. So the pressure's off, and I managed to scrub a few runs. But it was at Pakistan, to knock on my door within half an hour arriving and say, come to my room and watch Only Fools and Horses, meant a lot.
And during that test match, England get 3-9-9-3 first innings. We ended up having a 70-run lead. Colley got 100. It must have been a flat pitch, because you got 60 and I got 39. So it must have been flat that first. Yeah. We got 70-run lead. Then all of a sudden, the Alastair Cook really made the name for himself. 50 in the first innings. And 104 in the second innings. Batted quite a bit with somebody who you batted with a long time in your career, and Kevin Peterson, to set up what should have been a win if the light had stayed. Because I think we would have bowled India out for that victory. But to get 100 on debut, how much of a weight off the shoulders is that?
Yeah, I can scarcely believe it. To be honest, a week before I was lying on the beach in Antigua, then I was in a place I never heard of, Nagpur, with a test 100 to my name. It was unbelievable. I tell you what it does do when you get 100 on your debut. It kind of, you earn the respect of the changing room very quickly. So they know you can play then, don't you? That's half the battle. It's like, who's this guy coming? Is he any good? Probably had a few dodgy nets in that 2 days before. And I just, that settled me enough to think, well, actually, those guys rate me. And then when I got my second 100, that's when I thought I belonged a little bit. at international stage the next summer, where I thought, well, anyone can do anything once, can't you? Like, so to do it twice, that meant then I started to believe that I could be it. But the, you know, just for me, and then walking into changing room after that first 100, actually, everyone thought I thought I'd earned the respect of everyone else, and I think that's a big thing that, say, anyone walking into any changing room, any team, is important.
Yeah, you did earn that respect. You know, ridden in, your respect was ridiculous throughout the whole of your career. But 6 years on, you go to Mumbai, and this is the one I want to talk about. Is this one of the best captaincy victories you had? I think you were captain in 2012.
Yeah, I was. It was an unbelievable tour. To go in there and to beat India in India was an amazing thing. What we were blessed with on that tour was two unbelievable spinners. We talk about the batting, we talk about KP's 100 in Mumbai was a ridiculous 100. One of the best innings you'll ever see on a turning wicket. We'd lost in Ahmedabad heavily, pretty much by an innings, but I think that was 9 wickets, wasn't it? They thumped us.
Yeah.
They went for 4-0, so they produced absolute dust bowl at Mumbai.
I mean, what was it like being out there with Kevin on that time? Because you got 122. You put yourself down there. You got 120 in that innings to set up that match. I know Swanee and Panesar got 19 wickets in the match, but you got 122, and everybody goes on about KP's 100, but they forget you got 100 in that test match as well.
Yeah, I know. We batted well together. He was a brilliant, person for me to bat with. He wanted to be the kind of like the centre of attention in terms of, you know, dominating the bowlers. And I could go and they turned their attention to him because they realised what a dangerous player was. So I could slip under the radar. You know, he liked facing, no, there's nothing wrong with this. I'm not saying anything wrong. He liked facing the balls. I didn't mind standing at the non-striker's end. Do you know what I mean? It worked really well. I'd get the singles and he would take the attack to them. Our partnership together was, we played well together. There's no doubt about it. And I've said it, it was a shame how it all ended, you know, a year or so later. You know, cricket is never great with cricket on the front and the back pages. But that test tour was a brilliant test tour. We were so lucky with Monty and Jimmy. Monty and Swanee being outstanding. You know, you're not going to beat India in India, no matter how many runs you get, if you don't out bowl them with spin. And those two were fantastic.
Alistair, Sir Alistair, I should say, I keep forgetting that. Sir Alistair, thank you very, very much for joining us on the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Homie, brilliant. You know, the passion in which Sir Alistair spoke about Dan Lawrence, the memories that were evoked clearly by you asking questions about India and tours gone by, and also the insight as well. You know, he knows exactly what's going on in that dressing room, and in some of the insight surrounding Johnny Bairstow and the like was absolutely fascinating. But we'll have to talk about that another day, because time is against us. Still to come on the Cricket Collective, an interview with Amal Verdi. You're listening to TalkSport 2.
It's a sweep from Bairstow. It's 100 from Bairstow.
It's all well and good people having opinions, but they've never been out in the middle.
Bugs.
Yes!
On the back foot! The bowler! It goes on the onside. They take one. Is it going to go all the way? It just gets to the advertising rope at the far end. And Ben Folks has 100 on debut.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Myself, John Norman, and the main man, Steve Harmison. Now, the National Lottery is honouring grassroots sport today. And as a number of sporting venues are set to be renamed to pay tribute to the volunteers. The volunteers who have gone above and beyond the call of duty to support their communities during the pandemic. And one of the venues to be renamed is the Kia Oval, where our next guest has played for a number of years. I'm delighted to say that Surrey spinner Amal Verdi joins us on the show. Amal, we've already spoken to Sir Alistair Cook. He's playing a big part in this as well. But give us an idea about your participation and the importance of grassroots cricket.
I mean, we were very lucky to have Ratan here yesterday to do the unveiling of the stadium, which has been renamed after him for a day or so. And I think it's very good that people like himself get recognised for what they do for the community and what they do for cricket in general. I think that's where all the professional cricketers come from. I mean, without any grassroots infrastructure, we don't have a professional system. So, yeah, I think it's very, very important.
Yeah, I listened to an interview that you did around June, because you were part of the reserve squad in the build-up to the West Indies series. And, you know, you spoke at length about, you know, the grassroots cricket. It's community cricket as well, isn't it? It's where families and communities get together. And all sport has really suffered this year by just not having the lack of access to such facilities because of the pandemic.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at anyone's, you know, memories of cricket when they first started, it's all a lot around, you know, family orientated, around a club, having a strong connection with the club. And I think this year has been a bit of a sad one where, you know, everyone's having to kind of be a bit distant from everything. And, you know, the whole infrastructure of the club and everything is changing. So I think it's definitely something that hopefully goes back to normal as soon as possible. But I think it's something that people have definitely missed.
Now, one of the things that really leapt out to me listening to you speak in June was a point that you raised. And you were part of the, I think it was a 30-man squad, essentially. And you were playing in some intra-squad matches ahead of that first test. And the point you made was, look, I know that I'm not favourite to make it into the first 11 to make my debut as a test cricketer, but I've got to approach this situation with the mindset that I want to be named in that 11. Now, the confidence and the clarity of thought really impressed me when I was listening to you speak. Now, it didn't happen for you in June, but you have been named as part of the reserve squad to go to Sri Lanka. Are you approaching that in exactly the same way?
100%. I think, you know, as we've seen with the COVID or just any sport in general, you know, things can change very quickly. So I think, you know, it's quite honouring that I've been seen in that light, that I'll be travelling with the team. And yeah, I'm definitely going to prepare as if I could be playing the first game. There's no reason, you know, why my ability isn't good enough. But I think the fact that anything can happen, you just got to be ready for that opportunity.
And Amo, you got Mo and Ali back in the Red Bull squad. How valuable is it to gonna spend some time with somebody who's played so much international cricket, whether it's with Red Bull or White Bull, and doing a similar job to yourself, bouncing ideas off and really, you know, somebody you've looked up to?
Yeah, whenever I've spoken to Mo in the past, he's been excellent. I mean, his experience is amazing because, you know, he's played, you know, in the current game and against all the different types of teams, different competitions and everything. So he's got a lot of experience to draw from. And it's always good speaking to him because I think playing on different surfaces, playing in different environments, you know, if you can pick up a few tricks before you play in those environments, I think it's always handy so you're prepared. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to working with him and all the other guys that are going to be there. I think it's going to be a real good trip.
Amar, you know, when you think of counties, you think, and you think of the spinners coming through. These days, you think of teams like Northants, Somerset, Essex to a degree. But, you know, Surrey have got a proud history themselves of providing England with spinners, you know, going back to Tony Locke and Jim Laker, through Pat Pocock, who still plays a part in the club, and of course, Gareth Batty, Ian Salisbury. Give us an idea of the culture that is within the county in terms of trying to progress spinners from within the ranks to move on and go on to higher honours.
I think we've got some good coaches, especially in the youth setup. We've got some good spin coaches, and I think that Surrey are definitely very supportive and, you know, provide what we need to develop spinners. I mean, I'm quite lucky at Surrey that, you know, I've worked with Bats while I've been here. I also work with Vic, and we've got Jono who works with us as well. And I think it's really good that you're able to kind of draw from loads of different experiences and people that are currently playing the game or have played the game. So I think the infrastructure and we've got the right coaches to kind of develop that side of the game. So I'm quite lucky in that aspect. And yeah, I really enjoy working with them. And I think what's key is like understanding, you know, how to bowl on different surfaces, because, you know, you could be playing at one ground where it turns a bit more, one where it's a bit green. So getting people that have got experience of how to kind of change the way to bowl on different pitches, I think that's quite important.
Amar, you've mentioned the likes of Bats and Vikram, and, you know, you've got Stewie there as director of cricket. Mentioned Moen, who has played, who was going to spend the first part of the winter with you. If I was to ask you, Amar Verdi, what do you see in the next 6 months? I think Stewie should be asking this as director of cricket. Where do you see your game improving? Where do you see your game being when it comes round to Surrey start playing again in April? And the ideal, you know, life choices and footprint you're going to give yourself, where do you see that being? And what do you see that you want to get out the next sort of 6 months of your cricketing career?
I think kind of the short term would be, you know, impressing in the England setup and kind of maybe getting an opportunity to make my debut in the this winter. I don't see why that can't be an option. And I think after that would be, you know, starting the season for Surrey and doing well in the Red Ball cricket and potentially making my debut in some of the other formats as well. So I think this year will be an interesting year. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm just going to keep working up my skills and getting them better and better, so I'm ready for any opportunities that may come.
Brilliant stuff. Emma, well, look, as a Surrey fan, I hope you have an absolutely amazing championship-winning, T20 blast-winning, whatever the 50-over cup is called these days, winning season. And enjoy yourself, mate. Enjoy the journey, I think, is all I have to say. But I appreciate your time. And, of course, to find out more about how the National Lottery is celebrating the work done by unheralded people across the UK, visit www.lotterygoodcauses.org.uk. Well, I said earlier on in the show that we were going to discuss Moeen Ali, and speaking to Amar Verdi, the question you asked of Ali, it brings us into focus. You know, I spoke to Moeen before the South Africa series, and again, I just got the feeling that in terms of confidence, in terms of mentally, I'm not sure that's the Moeen Ali that we used to watch 3 or 4 years ago. He's such a well-respected man. He's such a well-loved individual. And, of course, he's part of a World Cup-winning ODI side. He's got bags of experience, bags of test cricket. And, you know, with Adil Rashid not in the side, they're absolutely desperate for him to come good. But if it doesn't happen now, Harmy, especially when you consider what happened against Australia last time he was there and the last time he played Australia, I just have the feeling it's now or never.
Yeah, it is. It is now or never. I think the edge is up. Tells you that he'd be nearly, I think he'd be 35 on his next birthday. He's got a real riches when it comes to his winnings and his career. I think England are a better side with Moeen Ali in it. I think stats prove that. I think England...
What, test they're better?
Yeah, I just think
even
all
now,
round,
do you think?
Yeah, I still think even now. And I think the one thing that you mentioned there, confidence and...
Moeen Ali playing India off. Of all the teams, you know, to try and get your confidence back. All right, I can see bowling as part of a three-man spin attack.
Yeah.
But bowling as a part of a two-man spin attack in India, or bowling as part of a you're on your own spin attack against India at home or away in Australia.
I think you've got to park Australia to one side. I think you've got to park India in England to one side. And I think part of us has got to park the Indian tour a little bit to one side. Moeen Ali has to start well. If Moeen Ali starts well, I've got no doubt Moeen Ali will be fine. I really do. I do think England are a better side with Moeen in firing. It's how they're going to use Mo. I've got a sneaky feeling England might bat Moeen Ali at five and Dan Lawrence or Johnny Bairstow doesn't play. England try and play three spinners that route. And Moeen Ali is a better spin bowler when he's scoring runs. I think if you look throughout the length of time in Mo's career, when Mo gets wickets, it's off the back of a cameo of 40 or 50 or even more than that at the back end of an innings where he's been let free and had a go. When Mo scores runs, he seems to have confidence in his bowling and he gets wickets. So I think the Indian series, both home and away, is going to be put to one side. And if they want Moeen Ali, the best they can possibly get out of him, I'd actually be tempted, if I was Chris Silverwood, to say, right, Moeen, where do you want to bat and where do you want to bowl? Because I want you in my team. From a psychological point of view, I want you in my team. I think we're a better team with you in it and when you do it bowling properly. If you're not bowling very well and you're not bowling properly, then obviously that will determine whether you're going to be in the side or not. You tell me where you think your best position is to bat and where you're, you know, and your bowling look after it from there. And I think I would go down that route. And I'd be potentially trying to encourage him to play as a get him into a batsman's mind. Because whenever he scores runs, it seems to have confidence on his bowling. And I think that could take a knock-on effect into the next test match, to the next test match, and then beyond. And I think that's how I'd address the Moeen Ali situation. And his talent is there for everybody to see. Win World Cups. He can score hundreds from numbers 5, 6, 7 and 8. And he's taken 5 wickets on numerous occasions. It just seems to be that getting him off to a good start, and when he gets in a rut of negative performances, the sort of the hole keeps on getting deeper, and he struggles to get out of it. For me, he has to start off on the front foot, start positively, and if he does that, we've got a great chance of seeing, you know, Mo and Ali from 4 or 5 years ago, as opposed to Mo and Ali from 18 months ago.
Now, last time England were in Sri Lanka, of course, it was on TalkSport 2, and England came away with a comfortable 3-0 victory. A couple of dodgy moments in and amongst the test series itself. Some questionable captaincy from Lakmal. They were missing some players at the time. Now, we haven't really spoken about Sri Lanka, and we will do, of course, at length between now and the start of the series. But if you are from a Sri Lanka mindset, you're looking at this England team, you're thinking, well, no Adil Rashid, Moeen Ali down on his confidence. It doesn't look as strong spin bowling attack. There's no Ben Stokes. Now, Jofra Archer wasn't in the team last time they played, but the balance of the team has been weakened. Rory Burns, who scored a century in the series, he's not playing. Sri Lanka themselves will feel that they maybe are in a better place to spring a surprise than they were 2 years ago.
Yeah, they are. And that's exactly right. I think in Sri Lanka, if I was in the Sri Lankan camp, I'd be looking at it and thinking, right, we get Joe Root out, we've got a great chance of knocking these over. Because everybody else in that group of six, the other 15 blokes in that group aren't saying to me they're going to get, what, 6.5 hours, 7 hours, 8 hour innings out of them, which you should be able to have to. That's what you have to do in the subcontinent. You have to bat big first innings. You have to be able to have somebody to bat for more than at least a day. You need somebody that can bat the 5, 6, 7 hour innings to give yourself a best chance of getting 400, 450 and beyond to give yourselves a chance to win. Other than Joe Root at this minute in time, England are looking very, very weak and inexperienced on that front. So from England's point of view, that is somebody that's going to have to put their hand up. Crawley, Sibley, Lawrence, whoever. But from Sri Lanka's point of view, you've got to be looking at this and thinking, yeah, Josh Butler, he's not somebody that scores massive, a big amount of runs. He's going to be batting at number six for the balance of their side. You look at the Teal and you think, well, if we can get them on a turn and pitch, you know, we could get five down, the old England from the 90s, you know, five down all out sort of stuff. So that's the way I'd be looking at it if I was Sri Lanka. I'd be coaching them in that way, thinking, right, no matter how big the partnership is at the top, if we get on a run and we get them four down, we potentially could bowl them out within 25, 30 runs. That's how I'd be putting a mindset into the the Sri Lankan bowling minds. And I think, you know, from an England point of view, from a management point of view, that's what I'd be worried about. But Sri Lanka, it's a little bit like when you play Pakistan. You just don't know what you're going to get. You could get absolute brilliance, or you could get a complete and utter shambles.
Look, we're going to have plenty of build-up and programming for you on Following On and across on TalkSport 2 and the Cricket Collective in the build-up to the Sri Lanka series. We're going to have a look back with Gareth Batty and Sam Ellard in the manner that we did with Harmy, looking back at some of the choice moments from South Africa at the start of the year. Looking back at that Ben Folkes century, what a moment that was. Gareth Batty in the commentary box, commentating on his teammate getting his maiden test century. That was an absolute highlight from that tour, that's for sure. We're also going to be rejoined, Harmy, for the next few weeks in the build-up. We'll have a Sri Lanka Cricket Collective special as well. So for now, that's it. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Harmy.
You're welcome.
Brilliant interview with Sir Alistair Cook. And you can, of course, catch up and listen to that in the Following On feed on Acos, Spotify or Apple Podcasts. But for now, thanks for listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.